Blog Talk Radio.
A second here. The heck is going on?
I've been one and dine with kings and queens, and I've slept in Alice and dined on pork and beans.
Do you remember that?
Yes,
kings
I do.
And queens. But real quick for the people listening to us, you're here, you're at Scoop Slam Radio. My kiss smack is, it reminds me of two scoops or whatever, but we're at Scoop Slam Radio. Don't forget, you can check us out Tuesday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Mike, I don't know about you, but people, you know, is it me or do they, you know, because I'm going to go over the lineup real quick. Mike's going to let me lead because we're going to spread our wings, you know what I mean, broaden our horizons because we're going to go ladies night and do some MMA, jiu-jitsu, judo talking or whatever. But when I tell people Pacific Standard Time, they'll go, is that a... Is that West Coast, or is that so now I just put California time or whatever so that they know.
See.
So that happened with Chael Sonnen. He had an interview with Big Van Vader. He was going to put him on the show, and he told him Pacific Standard Time, and I guess Vader called him 3 hours later.
Oh, man.
I never got, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, man. That's why I try to put, you know, I did put PST, but then I was like, no, I better spell this out. I don't want to insult anybody.
As long as they don't have PTSD, I guess, you know, we'll be okay. But
exactly.
You know, I got to tell you, well, for the people listening to us, I'm gonna lead the show a little bit. Got my man Michael Parks over here because we're gonna move into a different direction, because when Mike and I first started putting this show together, I'm like, bro, let's, you know, back in the day when I was at On the Mat and stuff, I had a producer named Cody, and I called him Cody Rhodes, who he looks nothing like Cody Rhodes, but he, you know, he ended up, he didn't know anything about wrestling. He had judo, jiu-jitsu, nothing, but he was with me for so long, and I took him so many places that he became, not an expert, but he knew so much, and he'd been all over, and it was just, we had so much fun, you know. But he was my comedy relief because I would use him to, you know, to take a shot every now and then or take a throw or whatever.
Right.
So I told Mike, I said, hey, we got to get into it so you could see what I'm talking about. And it lit the fire because I'm gonna send a text to Tom Erickson, who fought in Pride, and now he's one of the coaches for Duke University. And I believe this Friday they start with the collegiate wrestling and stuff like that. So I got to get him on because he, you know, dude's a wealth of knowledge. He's one of those guys that just, he doesn't BS around or mince words. He made me laugh because I had him on one time. He goes, you know what, dude, I don't run from anybody. I'm too big and I can't run anymore. So if you come after me, you know where I'm at or whatever. So we're going to move. But, of course, we'll always keep the home base, you know, with the pro wrestling and stuff like that because, you know, Mike's got a lot going on. Now, before let me introduce who we got coming on. Hopefully at 7:15 we got Jackie Cadline coming on, who I've known forever. Since she was wrestling at Milliken, since she was a little kid and moving on up, but she recently fought in Bellator. And I'm going to talk to her about it because, you know, I'm horrible on apps, so I didn't get to see the fight. I believe she won a split decision, if I'm not mistaken or whatever. So I'm going to talk to her a little bit about that. I wish it was on, even if you could just get the regular pay-per-view, you know, and just, you know, go to DirecTV, get the regular pay-per-view, I'll buy it. But apps and all that crap, I'm not with it. Mike, am I an old man that doesn't know, or how does that work?
You know what? Actually, last night I ended up turning the Showtime and watched the tail end of the Bellator fight. So maybe she was on that one.
She might have been on the prelims, which was on the apps. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's why we'll have her on to ask. But go ahead.
Yeah, because, you know, I was sitting there. I'm like, oh, I totally forgot that Bellator, you know, gets Showtime shows Bellator.
Yeah.
And so I was watching it last night, and I was like, okay. You know, it was the main event. So, you know, if she was on, I missed it. But,
you know, AJ McKee, who fights in Bellator, he's at the home gym over there at Metroflex. So he comes to a lot of the events and stuff like that. And I have a pretty good working relationship with his dad, Antonio McKee, who we're, you know, talking about doing some stuff with. So it all comes out in the wash. But Pauline Peter Macias is going to come on at 7:45. And it's new to Mike because I hate to beat a dead horse to death, but she, when I was working for King of the Cage, I'll give a quick story. It was in Lac des Flambeaux, Wisconsin, okay, which means Lake of the Torches. It was, we flew to, I don't know, Minneapolis or something, and then it was like a 4-hour drive to get to Wisconsin. And I was riding with Herb Dean and a couple of the cameramen or whatever. We didn't talk much because everybody was passed out. But anyways, it's one of those Indian reservations. So when I saw Pauline Peter Macias on it, and it said judo and stuff, and I thought, man, you know, that sounds familiar. Some of the people she trains with or whatever, she was fighting a girl named Julianne Daniels, who we'll have to have on here. I've had her on other shows or whatever. And Mike, I have been doing this for a long time, jujitsu and working for Long Beach Fight Night, then working for King of the Cage and Tap Out, On the Mat, Sinister, all that, done, seen and heard it all. But to this day, that match sticks out more than any other match that I've ever seen, even working for Camo now. It was amazing. She was just stepping in and judo throwing her, but Julie had good jujitsu. So even though she was on her back, she would work out of it and try to submit her. But then when they get back on the feet, you know, Pauline would close the distance and she'd throw those hips in and boom. I mean, she was like a helicopter, dude. Flying. And it was amazing. I mean, I was like, dude, these girls went at it, you know? So Terry Trebilcock, the owner, usually, you know, we do an interview with we're shooting for MAV TV. So they tape all the ring entrances and everything, because if they're quick knockouts, they have to have enough time to fill the 2 hours or whatever that they're on. So, you know, we usually interview the winner afterwards or whatever. So that fight was over. The people went nuts. I mean, even it was truly behind Julianne Daniels, but once that fight was over, the people were just standing and applauding because it was such a good fight. And Terry came into the ring, to the cage, and he said, hey, get them both on the interview. I want them both. And I'm like, that's the first and only time, for me anyways, that he did that. I mean, he got in the cage to make sure you get – that's how good that fight was. So Julianne went on to do a few things. I talked to her not too long ago. She got married. She had a child. And, you know, she still trains jiu-jitsu and all that. But Pauline has went on to fight at LFA, Legacy Fighting Alliance. And I believe she did Dana White's Looking for a Fight or something like that. And now she's, you know, trying to get back into the UFC or whatever. She's – dude, there's fighters and then there's, you know – fighters, because she just goes after it, dude. She really is a go-getter. And I was never a believer in judo until I got tossed by Giovanni Varela. But, you know, now I'm a true believer. They close that distance once they get a hold of you. You know, that's it. So we're going to have her on about the 7:45 mark. We'll talk a little bit about that, talk a little bit about what the future holds. And she's one of the people, too, who moved to Tennessee to go train and stuff like that. So that's one of the questions, you know, when you get to a certain point, you know, do you go, hey, well, I'm starting to get to another level. I'm going to go over here because I need to work more with this, or there's better competition, or it's a different look, or do you stay with the team who brought you to the forefront? You know what I mean? I've been with this team forever. They believed in me. Maybe I shouldn't leave them. Well, give me your thoughts on that real quick, Mike. Should you stay, if you reach a certain level, should you, you know, go somewhere else?
Well, is going to Tennessee going to elevate her that much more?
The
team that's a train, so the team out there in Tennessee is better than the one that she's at now?
I don't know if it's so much better, but it's somebody who believed in her. Just like me, when I saw her, I thought, man, this girl's got something here. Let's, you know, she's going to move on. So they probably will ask her. saw the same thing and said, hey, look, come out here, you know, train with us. Well, you know, you'll get a different look or whatever. And then if you want to go back, you can or whatever, but we just think this would benefit you or something like that. We'll find out, you know, from her personally. But well, what do you think, man? I mean, should you? Because, you know, L.A. used to be the fight capital of the world and Vegas. A lot of people now go to Albuquerque, you know, because they're
right.
training out there with John Winkle, John, and the people out there. So when you get to a certain level, do you go – because, well, let me put it this way. Henry Corrales came up with Del O. He fought at Long Beach Fight Night. That dude is fearless, okay? He got to a certain level, but he went up to John and said, hey, John, you know, I'm getting to a different level or whatever. I'm going to go train in Arizona because I want to, you know, roll with Ben Henderson or whatever. I don't know what the exact words were, but, you know. And John was like, yeah, no problem, dude. I can't get mad at somebody who wants to better themselves. Just don't forget where you came from.
Right.
And he never did.
Exactly.
He still wears the Long Beach Fight Night on his shorts, and every once in a while he'll come back and he'll train over here and, you know, spar or work with some of John's students or whatever. So, you know, that way I would think it's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I mean if her going out to Tennessee is going to allow her to face, you know, different competition, you know, that she doesn't see out here, then I would say, yeah. She's got to go, you know, just go see what it's like.
Yeah.
But if she finds herself dominating out there, you know, then she needs to come back because she's not going to get any better because she's already better than everybody out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're pretty much just spinning your wheels.
Right.
That's like, you know, that's like having a football player who, He could be 14 years old and
right.
be that far, you know, more excelled skill-wise than the other 14-year-olds saying, well, you know,
right.
you're not going to go play freshman ball. You're going to stay down here and play, you know, midget Pop Warner football. And you're going to
dominate.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you're just going to dominate.
It makes sense.
But you're not getting any better.
Right, and it's the
because
same with Jackie.
Because you're running over everybody.
Exactly,
so.
It's the same with Jackie. Jackie trained with her dad, Mike Catalan, for years. You know, she wrestled at Milliken, and kept progressing, and then she got to a certain point, and she started training in MMA. So she went to Millennia and started working over there. But when she came back for the Olympic trials, you know. Mike and Stephanie, she came back to them and started training wrestling again. So, you know, she came back to where she came from to, you know, hone her wrestling skills and went to the trials and all that. And then, you know, first of all, of course, that's your dad. He's going to say, yeah, get back over here and, you know, we'll keep working. And then she went back to MMA. So I saw Romy from Millennia when I was working the fights at Metroflex when I was working for Camel, and I saw him and I'm like, hey, what's up, bro? And he goes, hey, what's going on? I haven't seen you since Tap Out days and blah, blah, blah. And I go, yeah, I know we should come over there. So we talked a little bit about that, a little bit about Jackie, you know, fighting in Bellator. He did corner her for the Bellator fight, I believe. When we get her on, we'll talk about that. But, you know, regardless of where she goes, when it comes to wrestling, she'll come back, you know, and work with Mike and Stephanie and her brother Nico and all that to you know, to hone the skills. So to me, I think that's cool. But if you say, well, I don't want nothing to do with you anymore or whatever, goodbye, that's kind of, you know, I don't know how you would judge that or whatever. Let's put it this way.
Right.
When I worked for Tap Out and Matt Sarah was a Tap Out sponsored fighter forever. And I have it on DVD. He, you know, Tap Out sponsored him. They saw something in him or whatever. And he, you know, he fought in the UFC and he got all the way up to a title shot with George St. Pierre. And, you know, they're on the bus, on the Tap Out bus going to and from with some fighters, and he gets a call and Matt tells him, hey bro, you know, I don't know how to tell you this or whatever, but you know, such and such wants to give me X amount of money, you know, to sponsor me or whatever. And Charles was like, bro, I can't meet that. But, you know, if you stay with us or whatever, he's like, you know, I'm going to go with this other company. So you can tell that Charles Mask Lewis was hurt. You know, he's like, bro. And then he's like, you know, we helped him all this way, and, you know, I can't be a part of that when he gets a title shot or whatever. But when he was on the phone with me, he's like, hey, bro, you know, we're still friends, man. I just want you to move on. I wish the best for you. But you could tell he was legitimately hurt. So you kind of get what I'm saying? You're with somebody for such a long time, and then they get to the promised land, and they say, well, thank you, but I'm going with this company because they're paying more money. So you kind of get what I'm saying?
Right, yeah, I got you. Yeah,
but I mean, that's the business, though, right? I mean, you got to take the good with the bad or whatever, right?
Yeah, and you can't hate somebody who wants to better themselves.
Right, which is exactly what Del O said or whatever. When, and Charles, too, Charles said, you know, I can't blame somebody, but, dude, can I just be a part of it, you know, or whatever? So let me go ahead. Go ahead.
No, and it's just like in independent wrestling. Promoters and bookers, we can't tell somebody, hey, you got to stick with us.
Yeah.
No, man. If somebody in Illinois says, hey, I want someone, come out here. Come out here so you can be seen out here. Who am I to tell them not to do that?
Yeah.
What type of person would I be to basically hate on you for, you know, expanding your wings and going out and seeing other stuff?
We got to get to Jackie, but I tell Della O that all the time. He goes, man, I worked with this guy, and he left me, and you know, he went over here, and this guy's a black belt under me, but he went over, and I go, Mike, I go, John, regardless of what happens, this is where they started. You can't erase that. They can't, you know, take that from you, whatever. Regardless of where they're at now, this is where they started. So, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter. Yeah, they went somewhere else or whatever, but this is where they started, and you can't erase that, and you can't forget that. So it's an ongoing controversy. A lot to talk about. Let me take a break. Hopefully Jackie's good to go. We'll get her on here, and we'll talk some Bellator, and we'll talk some training, kind of like what we're talking about now. If not, Mike and I will continue on, and we'll do a little pro wrestling. Okay, so hang on, everybody. We'll be right back. Talking like that about the Great American Bash and all that, he just puts so much into it. Dustin Rhodes, a Mac and Dream, and people—you hear the people going nuts in the background, right, Mike?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I was watching a snippet of a Ric Flair shoot interview, and he was talking about back in, I think it was 87, 88, when McMahon actually called Flair to come to WWF while he was still the NWA champion. And this was right before the Great American Bash. And so, you know, because he wanted Flair to wrestle Savage. And so Flair got on the phone with Dusty, and because at the time Dusty was the booker. And Dusty said, well, brother, you got to do what you got to do, man. That's what you're going to do. That's what you're going to do. And Flair said he stayed because he was loyal to the NWA, because back then NWA was stacked.
Yeah.
I mean, they WWF couldn't touch them.
Uh-huh.
They were stacked with talent. But, you know, story is Dusty ran into the ground. So.
How, you know, dude, how anybody could be a booker is beyond me, because it is the hardest thing in the world. You catch so much heat. And if you're nice and you say, hey, bro, you know, we can't put everybody on the show, blah, 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 whatever. If it's not that, it's money, bro. It's not like we're keeping the money, man. If we could pay you that much, we would. And then it's like, well, I want to be this and I want to wrestle. And you have such a dilemma in front of you. You know what I mean? So I wish Dusty would have just wrestled and commentated. That's it. So there would be no sort of heat or hate. But anyways, for the people listening to us, you're here. You're at Scoop Slam Radio, Scoopy Scoop, and Scoop and Two Scoops. You're talking with myself and Michael Parks, talking a little bit about MMA and stuff like that. I sent the number off to Jackie Cataline. Hopefully she's going to call in. You know, dude, this is what happens when you do MMA. People forget that they train on Tuesday, you know, Monday through Friday, or whatever, and then they'll call. Remember it happened with, oh, you weren't with us, but when we had Alan Goas on, and he called.
Okay.
We were about to go off the air, dude. It was like 10 after 8, and I had like literally 15 minutes to talk to him. And he's like, oh, I forgot, bro, and I'm training or whatever. So hopefully we can get her. If not, we got Pauline Pita Macias coming in at 7:45, and she already confirmed, so she's good to go. So we'll want to get back to MMA and all that and talking some judo and jiu-jitsu and all that, because it's a whole different world that I want Mike to experience, only because I had so much fun. I mean, I was married to Sergio for years, bro, years. And it was him who started all this. We, you know, when him and I were wrestling, I think we were wrestling for Martin at WPW, and we were like in our 30s, bro. And he goes, dude, he calls me one day, he goes, dude, we're getting old, bro. He goes, we're getting old. I don't know how much longer we could do this or whatever. And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, so I'm taking classes for broadcasting. He goes, maybe we could start a radio show or whatever. And I said, yeah, man, absolutely. You know, let's do it. So he did really well. I mean, it's amazing what Sergio knows. Sergio the Unholy, who was my wrestling partner for years, he learned how to work the boards, and he learned how to, like, do things like, when you record something to cut everything up, you know, and edit it and stuff like that. We had a Rafael Viramontes Realty or something, and he came down and cut his own commercial, and we put the music from DX behind it, and it came out, dude.
Oh, wow.
It was gold, bro. It was gold, because you know how it hits. Are you ready? And then he goes, Rafael Viramontes Real Estate. And we, you know, se habla español. And it was gold, bro. I'm telling you. So we planned on it being wrestling. The first two shows, like they give you these demo shows that you could do on cassette, bro. That's how long ago it was. And you turn them in, and the director or whatever tells you, you know, what you need to improve on or whatever. And when you're done with that, they give you an hour on a little AM radio station that was in Santa Monica. So I'm like,
oh,
cool.
Wow.
So Sergio calls me and says, hey, bro, he says, everything's good, dude. We're ready to go. And I'm like, okay, cool. So De La O and Thomas Kenny, who was one of De La O's black belts, they were fighting the King of the Cage. So De La O's like, bro, you should let us come on, dude, so we could promote that. We want to get that place packed. And I'm like, yeah, man, absolutely. So they came down. And our first show ended up being John De La O and Thomas Kenny, who were fighting the King of the Cage. So Terry Trebilcock, the owner of King of the Cage, he heard it, and he's like, hey, bro, I got a 30-second spot. You know, if you could put that on next time or whatever. And we're like, yeah, bro, send it to us. And he goes, I think I told you this. He goes, it's in Palm Springs, bro. Do you think you guys can drive down and go pick it up? Sergio had one of them, you know, them little Honda CRX?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking? Dude, can you imagine myself and Sergio with that Honda CRX? Dude, every bump we hit on that 101 freeway, we just so. And then the little studio was on Sunset and Hobart, So we used to park across the street. There was a 99 cent store across the street. We used to park there. And remember when the phones first came out, I had one of those little flip phones or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to be cool or whatever, and we're messing around. And I'm like, my phone's ringing, and it's Nyvonne. And I'm like, yeah, man, this woman, I'm going to tell her. I'm going to be, bam, I hit my head trying to get in that car and almost knock myself out. So I'm bust. And Sergio goes, that's what you get. Trying to be hard. That's what you get. So anyways, we had that show, and they liked it. So Mike Guymon, who was part of Tap Out, that fought for King of the Cage and all that, he heard it. And he said, hey, bro, I'd love to come on and promote my stuff or whatever. We're like, yeah, dude, you know, you're more than welcome to come down. So he comes down. This is only our second show, dude, our second full-blown AM show in Santa Monica. We got to get Sergio on here, dude, so he can give you some of the details. But you used to have to hit a buzzer, and then it opens the door, and you go upstairs to the studios, right? So the receptionist right. calls and goes, hey, there's some people here for your radio show. So I look out the thing down the stairs, and it's the whole Tap Out crew. Dude, it's Mike Guymon, Charles the owner, Punk Ass the business guy, and then Skyscrape, who was like the face, and he's like 6'8", big old dude, tall dude. So I look down there and I go, hey, Sergio, I go, the whole Tap Out crew's down there. And he goes, man, stop playing. And I go, I think it's them. And look, and he looks down there and he goes, dude, the whole Tap Out crew's here. And I go, yeah. So we bring them on up or whatever. And, dude, I had just happened 2 days before to buy a magazine, a jiu-jitsu magazine that had all the Tap Out and, you know, how a lot of their shorts were getting a lot of wear in, like, Hawaii and stuff like that, and they liked them and all that. So when they came in, you know, we were doing our thing and stuff, and then I was like, hey, you know, I saw that you guys, your shorts are doing really well in Hawaii, man. Everybody wants, he's like, yeah, bro, we're expanding and all that. And then we go, well, we really like your stuff. And he goes, well, we'll hook you up, man. What are you guys, 4X, 5X? I went, boy, and they're laughing, and I go, hold on a second, all advertisements for Tap Out off, or what? And we had a really good time, you know, and luckily we knew who they were and we knew about them and all that. So we finish up, and he you know, Charles says, hey, can I talk to you for a minute? And I'm like, yeah, bro. He goes, I think you guys got something here, bro. He goes, you want to come work for us or whatever? And Tap Out was not yet the top clothing brand in MMA, but they were getting there. You know what I mean? If
right.
you go on my Facebook, you'll see that picture of Sergio and I with the Tap Out crew, and they have the black van, and they used to sell all the stuff out of that van and stuff like that. And I look at Sergio, and he looks at me, and I go, hell yeah, dude. He goes, well, you know, we're going to start. We'd like to get you a podcast and all that stuff. And we're like, yeah, okay, cool. So we ended up working for them for 7 years, bro. And that's why I'm telling you, when Mike and I, for the people listening to us on Scoop Slam Radio, we're waiting on Jackie Catalina. I'm hoping she's going to call in before about 7:30 or so we can at least get some talk. If not, we got Pauline Peter Macias coming up, but talking a little bit about getting into MMA, because I want Mike to experience it, man, because just like anything else, Mike, just like pro wrestling and, you know, whatever, MMA is the same way. You got good people who are really cool, and then you got people who are just, like I told you, I got the door slammed in my face at Machida Academy. Sorry, bro, but it's just true.
Right.
Anyways, so, you know, the thing about Charles, the owner, is he was really like, I'll give you one example. We started working for them, and we started doing really well. I mean, Tap Out started to get put on the map. And like I was telling Mike, we didn't even have to book anybody. They would call us. Hey, bro, can I get my fighter on your show? Can I get, you know, and I was like, yeah, dude, no problem. But we used to go to WEC a lot, World Extreme Cage Fighting out in Vegas. They used to do at Planet Hollywood. Reed Harris was the main man over there. And
right.
we would go, and then they would sit in the front, and Sergio and I would sit behind them, because he said if any of the Spanish broadcasts or news or whatever comes, you know, so you can translate for us. And we're like, okay, cool. And then Steven Sergio, there was a fighter from El Salvador who was really good. So Charles tells Sergio, hey, tell him I think he's a good fighter. And he goes, hey, he thinks you're a good fighter. And he goes, no, man. So we just, you know, we used to mess around like that. But anyways, we get to Vegas. They were going to have a big party, you know, for Tap Out, for the sponsors and stuff we're doing. We did a live broadcast. We had a whole bunch of different people on there, and it was huge. Tracy Lee came and took pictures. So when we got there to the hotel, Sergio had a bad habit of putting his shirts in the dryer. And you know, when you put a black shirt in the dryer, it starts to get gray. So we go to the warehouse, and they're going to get on the bus, and Sergio and I are going to follow him in the truck. And he looks at Sergio and goes, "Man, what the hell's wrong with you, man?" And I go, I look at him, and he looks at Sergio and goes, "Hey, come with that dingy-ass gray shirt or whatever." He goes, "Bro, it's all I had." He goes, "You know what? You and Fabi take off, you know, head to the Mandalay Bay, and we'll meet you there." And I said, "Okay." So we took off, you know, we went, we got something to eat and stuff like that. So we check in, we go up to our room about an hour later, there's a knock at the door. And I'm like, "You expecting somebody?" He goes, "No." I go, "Well, maybe they're here already." So we open the door and there's a duffel, you know, those big army bags, like a duffel bag that's huge that fits all your equipment and stuff like that. You know what I'm talking about, Mike?
Yeah, I have one.
Well, there's two of them. So he goes, "Hey, they sent these for you guys," or whatever. And I'm like, "Okay, cool." So we open them up. Dude, I mean, three or four brand new shirts, three or four hats, socks, tap out shoes that I still have today, the little pins that you put on or whatever, a jacket that was like an army jacket that had all the tap out with all the little wings and stuff on it. I mean, tons. It would take us 3 weeks straight. Or whatever. And I'm like, "Dude, you know," so when we see him later on, I said, "Hey, man, you know, thanks for the gear." He goes, "Hey, if you're working for me, I want you in tap out. I want your stuff crisp. I want it looking new. Get your fat ass to iron it." And but that's just the way he was. He, you know, if you're representing me, I need you looking good. Haircut, everything,
right.
Or whatever. Made fun of me, dude. I was so happy because he goes, "Go get a haircut." He told Sergio and I, go get a haircut over here at this place. And it's like a thing that went from the Mandalay Bay over to the one of those casinos over there.
Luxor.
And there's a bunch of Luxor. And there's a bunch of shops in between. Mm-hmm. So the haircut was like $75. I'm telling Sergio, I would never pay that much for my goal. We should go to the $5 barbershop park. And he's, no, don't do that. So we go. And I was all happy, dude. Dude lined me up real nice, you know, and everything like that, straight line across and stuff like that. I was all happy. So we walked to meet him at WEC. And Charles looks at me and goes, "Who are you supposed to be, white rapper?" And I'm like, "Oh, man." And then Punk Ass comes up and goes, "Dude, are you supposed to be Eminem with you, white rapper?" And I'm like, "Oh, man." They feel all stupid because they start calling, "We'll start calling you white rapper, you lucky Mexican," or whatever. But anyways, the point I'm trying to make is that's the way he was. We were, decked out from head to toe, and he really took care of us and stuff like that. So this is kind of what why I want to get Mike into this world, because now him as, you know, the proprietor of the, you know, PWA and all that stuff makes the difference. That's why they were number one for so long. You know, when he passed away, it really fell apart. But when he was there and in charge, I'll send you some stuff, Mike, so you can see what I'm talking about. He used to tell us all the time, you know, there's only one first impression. You smile, you make sure, you know, you talk to the kids and all that stuff, you know, and that's why he was so successful. So this is why I would like Mike to, you know, to get into this world a little bit so he could see what's happening. Now, the only problem is Mike and I work full-time jobs, and it's a mother to get out the hour, right, Mike?
Oh, man.
Let me take a quick break. We'll come back, and then we'll talk about that. We'll talk about what the future is for PWA, because, you know, you and I meet all the time. I can't remember who I was talking to. You know, you checked out the studio. We're working on a studio show for there. We talked about the live broadcast and stuff like that. So let me take a quick break. We'll reset. We'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit about that. How about that?
Right on. Let's go.
Okay. Hang on a second, because you know how this is when we need Sergio.
Why, hello there, and welcome.
How about that reset? But for the people listeners, you're here.
Quick.
Yeah, you're at Scoop Slam Radio. Don't forget, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/scoopslamradio if you want to check out some of the archives and stuff like that. Scoop Slam Radio is all one word. I finally got it, Mike. Remember I called you the other day to find out. We got some time. We got about 15 minutes until Pauline gets on. So if you want to call in, if you got some thoughts or whatever, you can call 563-999-3643. I'll give that number a little bit later on, too, in case somebody wants to call in. But anyways, we're talking to Mike a little bit about, you know, the mixed martial arts world and when I was working for Tap Out and stuff like that. Mike has to hear an earful almost every time we meet about Scotty from OTM. So we'll talk a little bit about that. But, Mike, talk a little bit about what, you know, I know Mike probably sees my name on his phone and goes, fudge, because I'm constantly on him. Because, you know, anybody could, Mike, like you and I say, can rent a ring and do a show if you pay him or whatever. But if you want to get to the next level and have a professional company, there's a lot that goes into it. So, Mike, talk about that, because I expanded a little bit on that about, you know, you went to go check out a studio and said, hey, man, let's do a studio show. And the live broadcast, which, you know, entails bringing all the bells and whistles so that we could take a good picture. So talk a little bit about that, what's going to get us into that next level.
Well, you know, it was a couple Saturdays ago I had asked, you know, Fabi to come down, check out the spot. It was a friend of mine has a security company, and his office is in this big building. And so Fabi comes down, and he walks inside, and, you know, he's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, this is cool. Then we ended up going next door to two other spaces that are going to be event places. And we're going to be able in the near future to run shows there. So, you know, it's a blessing to have everything that we actually need, like the place to have our live podcast and two venues to run shows from. We can pick and choose which show, which venue we want. So it's like you want to have your own place, and because you don't want to always run where everybody else runs, you know. And I get it, but you know, in order for us to be different than everybody else, and we have to move differently. And to me, moving differently means we got to find our own home. We got to find our own base. And that's what, that's what we're in the process of doing. So
And Mike, not to interrupt you, but not only that, but when we walked in, you know, what's that saying? Location, location, location. When we walked up to the front, there was a little area that with the big glass window that looked right out into the street. And there's just a massive amount of traffic. I mean, there's a Dunkin' Donuts. There's a Golden Corral. There's an In-N-Out. There's just so much stuff that's right there that there's a lot of traffic. So just the mind starts spinning, right, Mike? And we're going, look, dude, if we do this here, the people are going to see it. They're going to see the money. So it just kind of mushroomed into something huge, right?
Well, what it was, and I get to say it, but I was tickled the fact that you sat there and you were like, this is untapped
market
area.
Yeah,
they don't run shows out here. We could blow up, you know, we could blow up out here.
Yeah,
because they don't do anything here, and I'm like, exactly.
And
exactly.
Not only that, but it's right close to the freeway. So if you're coming from whatever South Bay, Norwalk, or whatever, it's right off the freeway. So and they just repaved the parking lot. Plenty of parking,
yeah,
or whatever. So those are little things that people, you know, don't, not that they don't think about it, but that you have to take into consideration when you do it, you know. So it just set it off. Okay, this is perfect. So let's do a live broadcast or recorded broadcast from here in this studio so that, you know, you have the background, blah, 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 whatever. And then, you know, we talked about we got to do a live broadcast because if you have a sponsor, you know, they you want them to see what you're about. So we just kept moving and shaking, and it kind of ended up being close because we're going to do the live broadcast from Metroflex on December 3rd. Right, Mike?
Yep, December 3rd will be at Metroflex.
And then the way it worked out,
and then,
the studio show is going to be December 5th, which is the Tuesday after. So we packed quite a bit
exactly.
into those few days, right?
Yeah, I mean, it again, you know, how the saying goes, things happen for a reason.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we're putting the final touches on Tational.
Right.
And so by the time we actually do have those two events, you know, we'll be advertising the show. And so
yes.
It's just I'm more happy because the owners of the building were like, you know, did you guys think about opening up a school, having something? And I'm sitting here, and I don't have to say anything right now because they're like,
yeah.
Well, how many shows do you want to have? And I'm like, you know, as many shows as we possibly can. I said, and if the shows, you know, if the fan base starts to get bigger and we go to a bigger venue, that's for those special events. I said, but this would always be home.
Yeah.
So we'd always run from here. And if we had, you know, because there's a gymnasium that I think, you know, that you've seen, that's a total game changer. I'm not going to say what city it's in. I'm not going to say anything.
Right.
But when we get there, it's going to be game changing.
Yeah.
And so, I've
been there.
Go ahead.
And I've been there and I've seen what it looks like and what it could do. And I think, you know, I just want the people to know, Mike, because, you know, it's not like we're sitting home eating donuts and smoking cigarettes, man. We're out there trying to get that thing to another level, which I would hope the wrestlers would listen to this show or listen to us or whatever and see, you know, we're working not only for us, bro, but to get you out there to where you can be seen. But let me go ahead and take a quick break, Mike, so we can get Pauline in here, and maybe we could talk a little bit towards the end of the show, if possible. If not, we'll continue on next week or whatever. But let me take a quick break. Let's get Pauline Peter Macias in here. We'll be right back. Hang on, everybody. Gotta love it, man. For the people listening, you're here. You're at Scoop Slam Radio. Don't forget, you can check out Scoop Slam on Tuesday nights. We had ladies' night. Jackie failed to call in only because it happens a lot. I try, believe it, but Pauline Peter Macias is just going to call in any minute now. I try to get Missy Estrada. I'll talk to you a little bit more about that because she runs the huge, huge jiu-jitsu tournament for not only women but men. You know, it's called Who's Number One. So I'm working on that. Maybe we can get her on later on. But, you know, Pauline, I gave her the number. She's going to call in any minute. So talking a little bit about, you know, about wrestling, what it takes, and trying to show how it coincides. You know, that's the same thing when I was working for Tapa. They were trying to get to that next level. So they were doing little things like that, you know, making sure everybody looked sharp and make sure, you know, this guy wore this or whatever. And like Rich Franklin wanted brown shorts with the pink, tap out logo or whatever. And Charles is like, let's do it, man. You know, if that's what he wants or whatever. It just really, it was good that I got to work with them to see the inner workings. And like Mike and I talk a lot when we go to the meetings, it just, you know, continued on from there. I went to work for Ed Suarez, who is the manager for Anderson Silva. And now he runs LFA, one of the places where Pauline Pita Macias fought at, and then went to On the Mat. And Mike, you can attest, how many times do I bring up Scotty and On the Mat when we go to a meeting?
All the time. All the time.
He was just a wealth of knowledge, and he had been in the business for so long that's why, you know, I bring it to Mike so that we can continue from there. But for the people listening to us on the line with us right now, it's funny because I don't know if she got to hear the opening or whatever, but it's just something that I hate to beat a dead horse to death, but this is why. But on the line with us right now, Pauline Pita Macias. Pauline, tell everybody what the PETA stands for.
Hi. Oh, PETA, P-I-T-A. It stands for pain in the ass. Yeah, and I've actually had my nickname longer than my real name.
Yes, and it's funny because it just kind of rolls off the tongue. You know what I mean? I keep saying Pauline Pita Macias, but, you know, I've had Pauline on many times, and now that I'm over here with Scoop Slam with Michael Parks and everybody, I said, hey, you know, if we're going to have a ladies' night and we're going to have MMA, judo, jiu-jitsu, whatever, I got to get her on because it's one of the people that I have the utmost respect for in the business, which is far and few between. But real quick, Pauline, Michael Parks, this is actually his show. It's mostly pro wrestling, but now we're branching out into the world of MMA and really starting to make some strides or whatever. So real quick, Mike, say hi to Pauline.
Good evening. Hello. Pauline. Thank you for coming on the show tonight. We truly appreciate it. How are you? How are you doing?
Oh, yeah. No, I will always be available. I will always be available for Bobby anytime. He's been there since I was an amateur.
Well,
so.
I got to tell you, I've been enlightening Mike on stuff like that, you know, and I was telling him how, you know, I started at Long Beach Fight Night, and when I was working there, Terry Trevilcock from King of the Cage and Mike Lowe said, hey, man, we like your stuff. Would you like to come work for us? And it took me about maybe a half a second to go, yeah, man, I can go and work for you. And then in the inside, I was going, yes, yes. So I was telling him how I saw you, you know, when we were out there at Lac-de-Flambeau, Wisconsin. And that was to this day how, you know, I worked for Tap Out for so long and Ed Suarez, I worked for him for a year and On the Mat. And to this day, I even am an inspector for Camo now. And I've been doing it for so long. My daughter is an inspector for Camo. But I've seen so many fights. But that one sticks out the most only because, you know, of you know, what it was and how the people, she went into hostile territory and people ended up giving her that respect after the fight. So,
I got a beer bottle thrown at me while I was walking in the cage.
Yeah, it was crazy. But here's the thing that Mike and I were talking about. You know, he was asking me, you know, about you and stuff like that. And I was telling him, you know, well, that's where I first saw her. And then she, you know, she continued on. I said, but she got out of her, I don't, maybe you didn't, but I would say got out of your comfort zone and went to Tennessee, you know, to go train and to further your career. So before we get into talking about, you know, like fighting at the UFC and working on getting in there, talk a little bit about that because, you know, a lot of these wrestlers and a lot of these fighters and stuff that we have, they're kind of afraid to get out of their comfort zone. Like you get to another level and it's like, well, do I stay here and with people that I'm comfortable with, or do I get out of my comfort zone and get another look to become better? So talk a little bit about that because you know, moving out to Tennessee is a big jump.
Yeah, it was. You know, I just was like, you know, I know what I want to do. It just seemed at the time like a really good place to move and, I made a name for myself out down in the South. So that was awesome. And then like, you know, I moved away from home, like right after I graduated high school, the Olympic Committee helped me move to Colorado Springs, you know, and I had just turned 18 years old. I moved to Colorado Springs, you know, and I grew up in California my whole life. And I think it's just, a mentality. When you know what you want to do, nothing is going to stop you. Getting out of your comfort zone is just another thing that you have to learn to deal with. You know, I've had so many holidays and birthdays and weddings and funerals and, you know, and it's just, and it's, I'm not saying it's easy like by any means, but you know what? I'm so blessed. I like get to do what I love and get paid for it. And like speaking of just always, you know, being like getting out of my comfort zone, like I actually live in Vegas now. So yeah, you know, Dana White said like, you know, you can train at the PI here and all that. And so, yeah, so here we go. Lynn and I moved to, we went from Tennessee to Denver for a few years and really good training in Denver and then now to Vegas. So I think when you are willing to kind of go through something, I don't really think about it because I just was so young and kind of left, you know what I mean? That,
yeah.
And I know like what it takes to get to the highest level. You know, like, well, the Olympic level and now, like, the pro level in MMA. Like, I know what it takes, so I'm willing to do whatever. And I think that's just, it's really just a mindset.
That's
Bobby,
what we're talking about.
Can I ask a question?
Go for it.
Yeah.
Bobby, by moving from California to Tennessee to Colorado, did you find that the competition was getting stronger, which was making you better to wherever you move to? And now that you're in Vegas, where that's pretty much, I believe, other than New Mexico, that's pretty much one of the premier places to be because of UFC being there. Did you find that you started to grow as you left California to go to Tennessee, to Colorado, and now in Las Vegas?
Oh, absolutely. And I feel like every place I moved to, I kind of got what I needed out of that, and then it was time to move on, you know, and then I got what I needed out of Denver, and then it was time to move to Vegas because, you know, if I'm really close to getting to the UFC, so I need to, you know, I need to be where the action is, and you know, luckily I'm a friend of Dana's, and he told me, like, Vegas is where you need to be to train and live, and it's amazing. Like, I go to the UFC Performance Institute every day, and, like, I really believe that Vegas right now, not only are the people that live here are such high caliber, but literally every week people are flying in from all over the world here to train at the UFC Performance Institute. So you get all the, like, and now, I mean, I see big names in the UFC moving to Vegas every day. It's crazy. Everybody's here. Even a lot of people represent their countries and whatnot, but they're, a lot of them train in Vegas, or at least do their fight camps in Vegas. It's like, I can't even explain or describe the, like, immense amount of knowledge here. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and I'm really excited about it.
That's fight capital of the world. When I was working for On the Mat, and they had the On the Mat fight shop right there on Spring Mountain Road, which was right across from Floyd Mayweather's gym, we would go set up, and we didn't even have to book anybody. People would just come. They would come and get gear and mouthpieces, and sometimes they're looking for gloves that don't have any writing on them or whatever. I mean, people like Rhonda, Misha Tate, just different people like that would just come in, and we didn't even have to book anybody. We just set up. So it's been fight capital of the world for quite some time. Now,
it really is.
And so that's what Mike and I were talking about, you being there, and like you just solidified that people keep coming in, so that competition just keeps getting better and better. You're working, what is it with the saying, iron sharpens iron. So you just keep getting that look, different look or whatever, which is going to benefit you. So real quick, I want to get into talking a little bit more about that, but I got to tell you, here's the thing, okay? I've never believed in judo. If you look at the pictures that I put up, there's one with me in the middle with Giovanni Varela from Anaconda Academy, and he worked with Gokor and all them, and he's like, bro, it's funny because I did Ronda's first pro fight in King of the Cage. Didn't know who Ronda was or anything like that, but I knew who Gokor was and I knew who Giovanni was. And they were telling me, you got to watch this girl. She's judo and she's really good. And I'm like, judo? She's going to get knocked out. Little did I know, you know, who it was. So when you know, I went to the Anaconda Academy, and he brought this little guy from Honduras. He was about maybe 5'4" or whatever. And he said, well, I brought this guy to show you. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to crush this dude. I'm 285 or whatever. But once he grabbed me and dug those hips in, and I'm up in the air, there's nowhere to go but down. And he just blocked at us. And, you know, normally you go, dude, do that again. There's no way or whatever. But he grabbed my gi, and he had me going one way. So just as I'm going, and then he pulled me in, and bam, again. So ever since that day, I was a believer in judo. So was that what similar, or is that what got you to the promised land, or did you just how did you get involved in that? Because that was my introduction to judo.
Yeah. Well, first off, real quick, judo was actually like created for a smaller person to be able to beat a bigger person.
Which I found out the hard way.
I'm sorry, what?
It's which I found out the hard way.
Yeah, right. I know. Unfortunately, a lot of people find out the hard way. But so how I got introduced to judo was my dad had a cousin that did judo. I think at the time he was a brown belt. He, you know, became a black belt early on. But, yeah, he did judo, and my brother was like – I mean, I was hardcore cheerleader gymnast already. By the time I was 7, you know, I was, like, training full-time for gymnastics and, like, competition cheerleading. Like, I was – yeah, that was me. And then my brother, actually, he was, like, 4 years old, four and a half or five. And he was – the year he was – or the month he was born in October, and I guess he had to be born before August to be on a certain age for sports teams. Needless to say, they said he was too young, and so he had to wait till the next year. Well, my parents – he just had way too much energy. My parents were like, we need to put him in something. Like, he's crazy. And he was, like, obsessed with the Power Rangers, so – you can imagine.
Yeah.
So they actually, my dad's cousin was like, hey, like you guys should check out judo. Like he can do it now. And they're like, oh, good. And they're like, and there's no punching or kicking in it. And my parents heard that and they were like, yes, sir.
Yeah.
So my brother, actually, my younger brother actually did it before I did. He was like 4 or 5. And then there was a, like, but like I said, I was hardcore cheerleader gymnastics, so I was at the gymnastics gym every single day, you know. But there was like one day a week or something like that, I was able to go watch my brother practice judo or whatever, and I was just kind of watching it and, you know, whatever. Like, I don't know that I really thought anything of it. But then my very first judo coach that I had, the coach and owner of, it was a Antelope Valley Judo Club. That's what it was called. Uh-huh. But the coach and owner of it, Steve Bell, he was from England originally. And so he had that British style judo, but he would come up to me. He's like, he's like, you should do judo. He's like, just try it. And I was like, no, I was like, I do cheerleading and gymnastics and I'm too busy. And he's like, okay, well, you can come when you can. He said, just try it. So I did. And like the first day I went to practice, I mean, I was 7, but I was like 6-pack, like I was this little tiny gymnast. I was super flexible and super strong. And I went out there and like one of their really good guys, I like threw the hell out of him or something like that. And the rest is history. So I started and I was 7. And like 5 or 6 months later, I actually like won the state championships in my age and weight, and then after that, I went to the nationals and I won gold again. I got a gold at state, gold at nationals. Then I went to the junior Olympics and won a gold there. And then there was like another big national tournament. I won that. It was just like they called it the triple crown. Like if you were a junior and could get all those three tournaments with USA Judo, like win all three of them, they called it like the triple crown winners, and it was like a big deal. But yeah, I mean, that was my first experience. So like within my first year doing judo, I had already won like every big competition for my age.
And then it just,
but that's how I got introduced to it.
And then it just snowballed from there, because Mike, and you and I talk about this a lot, you know, and especially when Rhonda was first broken out into the scene, you know, they close that distance. And once they get a hold of you, that's it. I mean, you're going over or whatever. So now that, you know, you've progressed and you're, you know, you where you're at today, this is just me. It seems like it doesn't happen so much as much. It's more stand-up. It goes in waves. Like when Chuck Liddell was the champ, it was just, you know, stand-up, and he was knocking people out, and that seemed to be the trend. And then when you had, like, Randy, it was wrestling. He was taking people down and stuff like that. And then when Ronda came on the scene, it was judo. They were closing the distance and tossing you. So has your game evolved into something different, or do you still draw back on that judo? Because, dude, when I saw that fight, you know, at Lac des Flambeaux, I mean, you were just closing that distance and, you know, it was helicopter central. And then, of course, you have to evolve and work on other aspects of your MMA. But so talk about that, where you're at now. I mean, I'm not going to say, well, do you not practice judo anymore? Because, you have to be well-rounded. But tell me what it's like now from training.
You know, I mean, no matter what, I found in fights that no matter what, my judo instinct comes out, and it just, like, I sometimes, you know, you're kind of seeing it as it happens, and I'm like, oh, that person's foot is stepping there, I'm going to foot sweep them, and I take them, you know, so a lot of it just comes so instinctually. Like, like I said, I started judo when I was 7 years old, and I've done it my entire life. You know, I did it at the highest level. However, regular standard judo is like traditional Japanese judo is not really great for MMA. Uh-huh. You know, if you try to come for a head and arm and you don't know what you're doing, like, they'll take your back or something, you know, or you throw them and land on them and they'll take your back. So, you know, it's crazy. There's this girl, I can't remember her name, but she wasn't doing the Olympic circuit in judo when I was, and she, like, she won a medal at the Olympics, and I want to say she won a medal at the World Championships as well. And I think she was, like, a two-time Olympian or a great judo player. I was like, oh, man. Invicta signed her, right? And I was like, oh, man, this girl's going to, like, oh, my gosh, she's going to kill it. She was, like, I was talking so highly about her judo because obviously I had respect for it. And I watched her fight, and she lost kind of very badly. And it was just, like, she just kept trying to get to, like, somehow grab and, like, try to do, like, the head and arm and all that. And it was just really hard to watch because I feel like nobody – like, she wasn't doing judo for MMA. She was just doing straight judo.
Right. it's a big difference. you see, Mike, she got all choked up.
So, anyway, so, like – I've been super fortunate that I've just been surrounded by so many great, like, MMA fighters and like, coaches and whatnot, and the level, like, the caliber of I'm training with here is amazing. And so I have very much worked with coaches to make, like, to change, not change my game, but I'm doing judo for MMA. Still, yes, close the distance and throw them. That is 1,000% always going to be me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But so I really brought out, like, a lot of judo throws that people never see in MMA, and I started using them in MMA because they're more beneficial for MMA than, like, other traditional judo throws that you see people do all the time.
Yeah.
And so it's just and everybody's evolving. Everybody's getting better, and it's just kind of, like, fun to, like, bring – it's like, you know, it's like a chess game. You get, like, all into it, and you're like, ooh, if I go here, I could do this, and if they step here, I can do that, and there, and bam. No, I think,
yeah.
You know, and it's like,
exactly.
Like, exactly.
Mother. Yeah. She and you got to see her in person, Mike. I mean, it's just amazing, and how much you have to evolve. But go ahead, Mike. Did you want to ask a question?
Yeah. How many different styles of fighting do you encompass? Because I know you're judo, but you have to learn how to grapple. Then you have to learn how to go from your feet, you know, do you do kickboxing, do you do boxing, do you do wrestling, mm-hmm. and then encompass all of that into your repertoire as well as your judo, and then that helps you become that well-rounded fighter?
Yeah, you know what? So it's funny you say that. So, like, when I was on Dana White's Contender Series, one of the things they asked me is, like, what do you want to show? Like, what do you want to prove? And what I said was I wanted people to see that I'm a well-rounded fighter. Like, I want to be good in every, you know, discipline, but I'm going to be the best at judo, of course, you know. But no,
okay. Yeah.
But no, in every, like, I just, I do everything, you know, you kind of have to, but because I've just put a lot of work into bringing everything together, and I've really created, like, over the years now, I've created a style that is very, it's a judo style, like, that really works for me, that's very, that works for MMA, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of a mix between, like, a Caro Parisian, a little bit of Bronda, a little bit of, I'm trying to think. In a weird way, a little bit of McGregor stand-up and, like, a little bit of the foot stuff because,
yeah,
like, he's a southpaw. So, and I'm a southpaw, so I get a little, like, just a little bit. And just, you know, he's tricky, and I like what he does. And then, what's the 155 champ right now in the UFC? Not Habib's guy. Oh, my gosh, I can't remember his name.
I know it's a Russian guy or whatever, but.
Yeah, he's from Dagestan. I like him.
Yeah, we've
his
been
face,
invaded.
I can't think of his name right now.
Yes. Well,
but anyway, a little bit of him too.
Real quick, because I'm sorry, I'm running up against the clock. We're Mexican; they'll throw us out. Well, I got Big Mike with me, so they might not throw us out because Mike's like 6'5", 6'6", or whatever. But this is why I have Pauline on, because, you know, there's no substitute for experience. You know, there's a lot that she's seen and just continues to evolve, you know, from there. So, you know, the one thing I have to ask, whatever, before we get out of here, is, you know, okay, being at the Performance Center and you're working to get, you know, to into the UFC or whatever, what I liked about LFA was they were on Access TV. So I was able to, you know, I pay a ton of money in cable, and I was able to put Access TV on, and I was able to see LFA or Invicta or whatever, and it seems like you get more exposure. I'm old. That's what I have kids for. I'm always like, Jessica, I don't know how to do this app or whatever. So do you think,
yeah,
am I just an old man that's got to get with the times? But I think you guys get much more exposure. And one of the few things that I like about UFC is if you want to get the pay-per-view, you know, you just go to ESPN Plus and you order it. Of course, I have my daughter do that for me too. But it just seems like with these apps, you don't get as much exposure as with the TV. If, am I wrong or am I just an old man?
Actually,
don't be afraid
to
say I'm an old man.
Say it's necessarily right or wrong.
Uh-huh.
It's just that, like, so like, since LFA went from Access TV to UFC Fight Pass, and putting them on UFC Fight Pass then gives them, like, access to be seen throughout the entire world. Access TV is mostly, you know, America, and maybe even only parts of it, you know, or whatever. But, I mean, and when you're on UFC Fight Pass, you get millions of views.
Right.
I think it's also just, I mean, that's all anybody uses now are apps. So.
Yeah, it's true. That's what
but
they
I
have kids for.
But I understand the wanting cable. Like, that's why cable's so expensive now, because people don't really use it.
Right. That's right. I pay, like, almost $200 a month in cable because I got to have the luchas from Mexico and everything. But so right now, as we speak, what's the future? You're just training, because, you know, we have a lot of fighters and they say, well, I got to stay within 10 pounds of my weight because I can get the call on this day or that day or whatever. So I can't get ready. I have to be ready or whatever. So is that kind of like where you're at right now, or what's the future?
Yes.
You know, what are you working towards as far as that's concerned?
Yeah, that's actually exactly what I'm working towards, especially being in Vegas. You can get a short notice call at any moment. And I make sure my weight's always, like if I have to make weight in 24 hours, I could, technically. It would, you know what I mean? But,
right.
You know, I actually had surgery earlier this year on my hamstring. My hamstring actually ripped off the bone at, like, my pelvis, and it, like, retracted down. So I had, like, a ball of it, like, balled up. So I had a ball of hamstring down by, like, the back of my knees. That was rough. I did that, actually. I was trying to help Casey Cortez for her fight.
Yeah.
Not this one she had, but the one that was scheduled and then got canceled or whatever. But, yeah, it was a fluke accident. It was just a fluke. I can't even, like, but happened. I had surgery. Luckily, Dana was gracious enough to, like, let me – I'm doing all my physical therapy at the UFC Performance Institute, and then I do all my strength conditioning there, and then we use the mats upstairs, you know, and bring people in to train. But them, like, three – I had surgery Friday, and Monday I was already at the UFC Performance Institute with crutches, you know, and they were already like worse on my leg. And then the second 7 days later when I got my stitches out, they put like I was already on crutches in the weight room lifting upper body weight. Now I'm back on the mat, so soon I'm ready to go soon.
Yeah, it's true, Mike. You know they got to be ready because I've heard of people getting title shots with 2 weeks notice and stuff like that. Well, let me tell you something, Pauline Peter Macias. It is always a pleasure to have you. That's my go-to person because you know she's got so much experience and I've got to see what she can do and all that. And I totally have faith. But I'm so glad that you're in Vegas because I talked to Scotty from OTM. He definitely wants to open back up out there. The COVID just threw a big monkey wrench. Everything that was going on. So if we do, I will bring Mike. You want to talk about a wallet? This guy's got a wallet. We'll go to Fogo de Chao and we'll say diet really? A madre way. We're going to throw down, eat some Brazilian barbecue or whatever. Buy some boots at that place down there or whatever for sure. So with that being said, I want you to. If you can give your social media, let me tell you something. When I have any woman on, I've had Sarah McMahon on my other show, and the stuff that these people write in, the messages and the emails and stuff, I'm like, you know, what these women must go through, it is ridiculous. So if you would like to give your social media, you can. If you don't, I have absolutely no problem with that because I've seen what these knuckleheads write or whatever, but we just want to make sure you get the exposure. Go ahead.
No, I do not mind. I'll give you my social. My everything's pretty much the same. It's at Pauline Pita Macias. PAULINEPITAMACIAS. And you can find me there most anything.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, well, I got to tell you, man,
well,
a million thank
soon,
you.
Let's do it again soon, definitely.
For sure. And we should be out there and not – in the near future. So we would definitely like to, totally on us if you want to go eat or even if we could just see and talk in person for a minute or whatever, because this is one person that I have the utmost respect for. I mean, because she takes it serious and she really works hard and I think it's paid off, you know, in bundles. So for the people listeners, Pauline Pita Macias, make sure you check her out, making waves. You know, she's healing up. She's out there training and we definitely look forward to that. A million thank yous for coming on. Okay, Pauline?
Oh, thank you so much. Nice to meet you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Pauline. It was a pleasure talking to you.
All right. Pleasure's all mine. All right, you guys take care.
For sure. We'll be right back after this, everybody. Pauline Pita Macias. Make sure you check her out. I had to put that on because that's what we're going to have to do when people start messing with Pauline.
You know, every time I hear that, I just think of "We for the Sky Boys."
Yeah, with the them boys. Yeah, it's a shame that one of them passed away because those guys, you know, were awesome. But I got to tell you, man, that's why I have, you know, Pauline on here because you know she. She's done so much, you know, in the world, and she's the real deal. You know what I mean? I've seen her in person and what she can do. But you see, Mike, regardless, sooner or later those injuries are going to come. You got to work through it. You got to stay in shape, you know, when you're at a specific level because they can call you at any minute, you know, to do a fight. So you kind of get what I'm talking about in that world, Michael Parks?
Oh, yeah, man. You know what, dude? It was such – honestly, I liked that. I enjoyed that interview because she sounded like she was having fun.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it was just I was able to get comfortable and just start bouncing things off of her.
Yeah.
You know, that were coming to mind, and I think the last one kind of shifted when I was asking about the different styles.
Yeah.
She paused for me and said, "Funny you said that." And it was like,
"Yeah,
those are the type of things because the stuff that goes through my head when we're talking to a fighter, you know, is you know, what's going through your head when you're fighting somebody.
Yeah, and a fighter who's at that level. You know what I mean? Well, you have to be well-rounded. You got to work on your boxing. You got to be in shape. You got to, you know, make sure it's a whole different ball game. You know what I mean? So it's too bad we didn't get to Jackie. I get it. You know, it happens a lot of people. She'll probably call me tomorrow and go, bro, I forgot all about you. You know, I got training and stuff like that. Cause she, you know, fighting in Bellator and everything like that. Same thing. She's got to be in shape. You know, she has to, you know, be ready at the drop of a dime. So anyways, for the people listening on Scoop Slam Radio, that's why we have stuff like this, so we can, you know, spread the wings and be well-rounded. I'm telling you, Mike, one of these days when we get out there to Vegas, you'll see what I'm talking about, man. I mean, because I like to get these. When we used to have them on the show at OTM, we'd go, hey, bro, you guys want to go to Fogo de Chão? Yeah, let's go. Because that's that Brazilian barbecue where they just keep bringing the meat. You know what I'm saying? We'd go to do the weigh-ins, the King of the Cage, and they would give us these food coupons, you know, so that you can eat at the casino or whatever. And I'd have a stack because they go, I think I'm going to go to Fogo de Chão or whatever. And they go eat, and they're like 15, 20 pounds heavier by the time they get in that cage or whatever. So it's cool. And it's, you know, it's just that my family's like, dude, we got to go to Vegas again. But that's where I like to go, because I know it like the back of my hand. And it's just like you said, it's a fight capital of the world. And there's so much going on out there. I just hope Scotty can get that OTM fight shop back in, so we can make some trips down there. And it's a whole, you know, it's just like anything else. There's some people that are just so cool and so nice, and you know, you get to talk to them. And then there's some people that just don't want to be bothered. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like
exactly.
I tread lightly around Nick Diaz. Nate Diaz was pretty cool with me because he was sponsored by OTM, but Nick Diaz was a whole different ball game. How you doing, man? What's going on? And it's like, hey, you know, I'm just right here, bro. You know, it's just, you got to be careful. So it's good that we can branch out and start moving and take this whole show to another level. Of course, people are going to call and go, God dang it, Fab, you talk too God dang much. But when it's something like that where I'm, you know, I have the passion or whatever, you know, we get going. But nonetheless, you know, Mike's working hard to get, you know, PWA to that other level. So we're working on that, but we just got so much on our plate that we want to bring it to everybody. So for the people listening to us, don't forget, we're going to be here on Tuesdays. We're going to mix it up with the pro wrestling as well as, you know, MMA, judo, jiu-jitsu, so we can have a full, you know, hour and have that time. But steadily working on that, you know, February 10th is the next show. We have mostly everybody locked down. There's a few loose ends that we're still tying up. But, Mike, as you can attest to, we are making strides to make this show blow the roof off that place. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah, man. This is the foundation of something that's going to be much bigger. So, you know, folks, when we start advertising this, we want everybody to be there for this show, because it's going to blow the roof off the Metroplex. But also want to say something else to the ladies of pro wrestling. Y'all need to come on the show. You guys need your night to come on here and to talk to us about your careers and what you're doing. So I don't care if you're here in California, Arizona, Nevada, Chicago, Charlotte, North Carolina. If you're an independent woman pro wrestler, come on the show. Join us. Get out here so we can talk. We can talk some wrestling, talk about you, and let everybody hear from you so you can get yourself out there. Okay,
yeah,
I'm off my soapbox.
We're running up against the clock, but I kind of get it though, man. Like I've been trying to get Savannah Stone, because like Mike and I talk about her. I think she's got something there, but I just kind of, you know, there's some things that hold me back or whatever. So we'd like to get her on here to talk. But, you know, when I had Taya Valkyrie on, when I was working for Kevin Kleinrock, you know, she wanted the call-in number, which I totally get. So when I come, I said, you can call in. You don't have to worry about giving out your phone number or whatever, because there's knuckleheads out there that send these stupid messages. And if you give certain people your phone number, you don't know who they are. You know, they live a certain way that they can't. Even with Jessica, you know, when Jessica was working you know, wrestling, you get people from Mexico. Oh yeah, come down to Mexico, you know, but don't bring your dad and, you know, stuff like that. Like, man, you must be out your guys take mine. But, you know, so there's, I can kind of get it, you know, but for the, if you're listening to any of the women wrestlers or whatever, hey man, you don't have to give your number to nobody. We'll give you the call in number. You call in, we'll talk, get your name out there. Maybe Savannah Stonehead, there's a different side to her that I'm not seeing or whatever. So it'd be nice for her to come on here and send her a message, Mike. Tell her we welcome her because she's got a show coming up, and I'm definitely going to go check that out. So maybe you can send her a message and we can get her on here. But anyways, with that being said, Mike, give us some final words so we can get out of here.
There's a few women I've sent messages to invite you on the show. So, you know, we're not hard to find, as Duffy would say. I ain't hard to find, baby.
Oh, yeah.
I ain't hard to find. So just come on the show, you guys.
Yeah.
Come on in so we can laugh and have some fun.
We'll work on that, man. And we'll keep everybody up to date on the social media and everything, so make sure you check us out on that. We'll be back here next Tuesday, and we're just going to keep pushing forward, man. We'll keep everybody updated on what's happening with the PWA. Once we get everything set in stone, we're going to make sure and put the screws to it, man. Everybody's going to be seeing us. I mean, God dang, we see a lot of you, but that's what we're all about. All right, Mike, I will see you soon. If not, I will see you right here next Tuesday. With that being said, I'll see you later.
All right.